Mrs. Rouse, would you please give us your full name and when and where you were born?
Yeah, I'm Helen Houston Rouse. My dad was a dentist in Nebraska City, Nebraska, and I was born on 16th of August in 1897. And Phil's father was a school professor in Peru, Nebraska. And we met when we were just 12 years old. And we're friends all those many years. He went to the University of Nebraska, and I didn't go there to school. I went to Peru State Normal. But we got married in 1917. Then after World War I, his dad was superintendent of schools in Scottsbluff, E.L. Rouse. So he heard about the homestead opening up here with the irrigation. So we filed on that. Phil came out and had to put up, I don't know how much money, but $100 or so, and filed on the land. And then Mr. Rouse, Professor Rouse, got Harley Shaver was a man that was his principal down in Scottsbluff, and came up and picked out the unit. And they could file on certain units, and then they actually drew them right out of a hat, just literally pulled them out of a hat. Phil filed on, this man filed for Phil on unit 144, and one night we were in Lincoln, Nebraska, and the phone rang, and Phil's dad said that he had drawn the homestead. And oh my, we were all excited. I'd never been on a farm in my life, and Phil had had agricultural engineering, and then he changed over to civil engineering in college, so he didn't know much about it either. But we came out to Scottsbluff then, and Phil, Sally was 11 months old when we came up here. Phil came up to the farm, and 80 acres, we drew 80 acres. Some of them got a lot more land. Ours was mostly irrigable. There's a little dry land out there on that high where that ditch goes through, and Pete Keenan and some of the other homesteaders got quite a lot of dry land, but ours was mostly irrigable and very fine soil. Rosebud silt loam, and everybody was so proud of that because it grew good crops. Phil came up and built a little one-room shack, 12 to 20, and then in the spring, we moved up here. Sally was 11 months old, and we didn't have a lot of money. We'd been working a while in Lincoln, but we hadn't saved too much. And some of the boys that homesteaded had been farmers, and of course they came out here with teams and tractors and had something to get started. We didn't have anything, but Phil managed some way. We bought a team, old Fred Ned, and a couple of sorrel horses that were awful nice, and finally got going on our homestead. At first, we didn't have money to drill a well, but we hauled water. Phil had the team, and he had a kind of a sled on the track and big barrels, and he'd go down to neighbors and get water. But after a while, we got enough money to build a well, and it was very deep and just elegant, soft water, awful good water out there. And we started in pretty poor. We didn't have much crop. Phil would go into the bank and borrow the money to get the crop in. And then in the fall, we'd have a little bit of money. One time I was practicing music up here. I was always in some kind of a program, played the violin, and Phil came in and he knocked on the door at Mrs. Holman's house, and I went to the door and he said, "I want you to look at this check." It was $5,000 or $6,000. He said, "This is the last time you're going to see it." He said, "I'm going to go down to the bank," and he said, "so we won't have any more money." But he paid all his debts and paid everything that we did, so that was good. The life on the homestead was kind of fun. You know, we were young and we didn't have a lot of money, but we had a lot of just wonderful neighbors. And the living conditions were entirely different. I never had lived like that. My dad was a dentist, and Phil's dad was a schoolman, and we'd always lived in towns, not too large towns, but nice towns.
You mentioned that the cabin or the building was 11 by 20. Were there any size requirements given by the government
as to
exactly how big your house should be?
No, nothing like that. You had to live on the place. Mm-hmm. And you had to have certain improvements, like a home. And I don't remember that there was any other thing that you had to build. Of course, we built a barn right away and a little house in the back, you know, that was necessary in those days without plumbing. But no, I don't think we had to have any required thing.
Could you describe what the inside was like?
We had a front door, and then there was a window on the east, and a window on the west, and a window on the north, and just one door. Mm-hmm. And they used to come in that way, but it was over here, and nobody would come in. So I said to Phil, why don't we put the door over on the south? So he moved it over there. And then later we built on a kind of a porch. Sally still has it. And then I said to Phil, why don't we make French doors on that? So he made French doors. Then later we built on two bedrooms and a little room for a bathroom. And Phil used that for his office, and two bedrooms on the north. And that took the north window off. And then later we built a little kitchen, and that took the west window, and then we got another door over there. Hank Jones said one time to Phil, you know, if I had that crazy woman for a wife, he said, I'd have my doors and all my walls hung on hinges. He said, every time I come up to your house, your door is a different place. Uh-huh. But Phil was a manual training teacher, and he could build, you know, he built this whole thing himself. Yeah, he built it on himself. And so we always laughed about that, because he was always doing something that the neighbors didn't always do.
Sure.
Now, as far as living, we had a lot of fun. We were never hungry. We always had plenty to eat. But it was borrowed money, of course, you know, from crop to crop. And then I gave the music lessons, and I used to go down to Mitchell and give music lessons. And we didn't have a car. We had the lumber wagon, and we'd go to parties. I'd sit in a kitchen chair. We didn't have a back, what you call it, on the wagon, just boards. Well, then just boards. We didn't have a wagon, you know, in the back. And so we had an old kitchen chair, and I'd sit on the chair and hold the baby and the fiddle, and we'd go to dances, you know, and I'd play, Mrs. Frank Melchick played the old pump organ, and we had a lot of fun. And it really was good fun, you know, lots of cake and ice cream and good things to eat. But the quarters in the home, one night we woke up and, oh, it was so cold, and the foot of our bed was just covered with snow. We didn't have any siding in our house. It was just the rafters, you know. Uh-huh. And it had blown in on the top. And we had the baby bed and a stove in the corner, just a cook stove, and that was our heating stove, too. Uh-huh. But I was trying to think here. Hardships. Yeah, well, we had a lot of hardships. The winters were kind of bad, and sometimes we'd be snowed in. One time we got snowed in, and we didn't have any salt. That was the only thing we didn't have. Uh-huh. So Phil went out and cracked some salt off the cow's chunks of salt, you know, and ground that up. I washed it, and it was good, and I salted potatoes, and it was just real good.
I was talking to Sally, your daughter, last spring when I called you to come up to school, and we were talking about, you know, life on the homestead, and she said that I got a big charge out of this. I think it was her. She said, I used to just love it when it would hail. She said, because I knew we were going to have ice cream.
Yeah.
She said, my mother and dad would get so mad. And here I was, happy because it was hailing, because I knew that we were going to have ice for ice cream.
We did. At one time, Phil spoke for visiting us there, and we had a wonderful strawberry bed. Pop loved strawberries. And he went out and picked a great big grape basket, one of those kind of baskets full of strawberries. And we were going to have just strawberries and cream milk. We had a cow and everything. And all of a sudden it hailed, and oh, Sally and I was tickled too. I was just nutty as you were. And I said, oh, we'll have strawberry ice cream now. And Phil was so mad. Here our crop was flat, the alfalfa. But we were tickled because we were going to have ice cream. The first few years we were here, you see, the sugar company didn't come for a few years. And so we didn't raise beets. We had just the usual things, corn and alfalfa and stuff like that. We didn't have the beets. But after the beets came in, then it got a little bit more prosperous.
And what year did Holly, was it Holly?
Yeah, it was Holly. And I think they came about 5 or 6 years after we did.
So that would be about
1925 or 26. I wouldn't know about that for sure, but it was
somewhere around.
But I know they let them come in tax-free, and some of the farmers thought that was pretty bad. They didn't have to pay any taxes for a few years because they wanted them to develop the land, which I guess it turned out to be all right. But there wouldn't be any Holly Sugar Company if we hadn't had the homesteaders here in the early days.
Get the crops for
you. Yeah, they had the Great Western down in Scott's Bluff. We used to have awful bad hails out there. I don't know whether they do have them so much now. But it would be funny, it would hail 1 mile and then maybe the next mile it wouldn't. Mm-hmm. But we always managed to get through the winter, and we always had enough money to, after we paid our debts, to start out another year. But
What was perhaps the biggest problem that most homesteaders faced? Was it money?
Was it just
making ends meet?
I suppose it was money, and then of course the school proposition was awful bad. There were no schools. There was a little McClurg school there that had been there when the McClurgs, and that was long years before the homesteaders. They were just farmers. Maybe they homesteaded, I don't know. But a girl that was growing up and married and had children, her children were going to that little school using the same textbooks that had her name in it. And so they were that old and worn and terrible. And Mrs. Morton's daughter, Burl, was Bernard Feeser's wife, she isn't living now, was the oldest one of the children. And she was a little bit older than Sally. And I think my Sally was probably the next oldest one. And Kate said to me, "We just got to have some schools. We just can't. Burl will be ready for school if you didn't, so will Sally." So we started to form our own school district. And we got out with a petition, and I ran all over the country, and we got up to the Funkhauser corner, and that's where the Ayers live now, Frank and Marion Ayers, north of Huntley. And Bernie didn't want to be in the Huntley district, so they stopped it right there, and then they filled in the rest of the district. And we got, we came to the school board meeting, and we were all smart aleck kids, and we got J.B. Fuller elected on the school board. Oh, we worked so hard to do that. And they didn't want us to do it, you see. They didn't want us to have anybody on the school board in Torrington. And so they didn't tell us that he had to qualify. See, we were so dumb, we didn't know that. And he had to come in within a certain, like you do in any election, you know, you got to go and qualify. But we didn't know that. So they kept it real quiet and didn't tell us that he had to come and qualify. So the time ran out, so we didn't have a man on the school board. So then we said, well, we'll just make our own school district. And that's when we started our petition and got. And Phil and Brian Fuller and Dave Boudry were the first school board members. And we really had a good, fine school district out there. We finally consolidated to the Huntley School. Phil drew all the plans for the Huntley School. He was an engineer and architectural, and so our schools are nice. You've been out there.
It's the same school that you have now. Sure, that's
they're all nice. And so we finally got our own school buildings and had our own superintendent and everything.
Well, that's very interesting. I thought perhaps that maybe either money problems or maybe school would be one.
That was one of the big things. Our cultural part of our, we didn't worry too much about that. We came to the movies and things like that in Torrington, and we knew a lot of the nice people here.
Did they have was it the Wyoming Theater then?
We did later. Not right away, but later we had the theater. It wasn't where it is now. It was down there where the Gamble Store, or where the Coast to Coast is.
Down at that end.
But, there was so many nice people, and we used to come into Torrington. Of course, we came to church. We had a church in Huntley for a while. It just met partly in the schoolhouse and in the little basement that we had for a rec hall, recreation place. And we'd meet there for church. It was non-denominational, really. It was Episcopal preacher that we had, but we didn't go through the ritual like that. And now I think it's all Presbyterian. Or is there a church out there? Yeah,
I'm not sure if there's not.
But we came to church, and I'm an Episcopalian. We came to church in Torrington mostly. And after we'd been there a few years, we went back to Scott's Bluff. We only had to live 9 months on the homestead because the Army time took care of it. So we just lived there really with all the time that we had. We just hadn't lived there 9 months. Some of them 3 years, you know, you have to move up. So we went to Scott's Bluff and Phil got a job down there in the sugar factory. And we stayed down there for a good many years. Then we got homesick for the farm again. We moved back up to the farm. And then we had some hard times then because we kind of spoiled ourselves. We had a salary in Scott's Bluff and had nice things. But that time we had so many friends in Scott's Bluff that every Sunday I'd just cook a lot of food because I knew somebody was going to show up from Scott's Bluff.
Could you perhaps tell us a little bit about some of the methods of farming? And you know, did you have a tractor or?
We didn't have a tractor.
Plow.
Phil had a little old what they called a grasshopper, and he pulled that with his steam, you know, and he ran along behind it. And Hubbard, who lived on the hill just west of us, had a tractor, an old tractor, because they'd been farmers. There are still Hubbards down the valley, and so Phil and Hubbard going to fix up this tractor so that they could plow a lot of land. And that was one of our big fights that we had. We just had some dandy good fights on that. Phil would go every morning, and I never had a garden in my life, and I was just crazy to plant something. And every morning I'd say, when are you going to plow my garden? Well, he said, I'm working with Hub, and when we get this tractor going, then we can do his 80 and my 80, and we can do it so much faster than I can do it with the little plow. So we had a tool chest right under the south window, and I was ironing, had the old range going with these hand irons, and Phil came up and opened the tool chest and got something out, and I yelled, when are you going to plow my garden? And he slammed the lid down and didn't answer me. He was mad. And so he got about halfway, and he yelled back, and he said, Hub will be in for dinner. Well, that made me kind of mad, so I hurried up and shook all of the coals out of the stove, and I hid all the food except the head of cabbage. I left that out, I took a great big bucket of eggs, and I took the baby on one hip, and this great big cream can full of eggs at high noon, and walked to Huntley, or started, and I got up about a mile and a half, and Louis Otis came along in a lumber wagon, and saw me coming up the hill, and he came and carried the baby, and I got in the lumber wagon and went over, and there was a Greens had a little store over there, and she kept the boarders, you know, that were building all these shacks and things around there. And they were sitting down to eat, so I pulled up a chair and fed the baby, and nobody said anything. But just after, just as I got out of the lumber wagon, Louis handed me the eggs, and then he handed me the baby, and the team ran away. They spread harness all over that prairie up there behind me. But we were out of the wagon then. But along about the middle of the afternoon, I'd taken my nap upstairs, and the baby had slept, and a fella came by, and everybody knew that I must be mad at Phil for some reason or other. So he came by and he said, I'm going over by your house, Louis Peterson said, and do you want to ride home? And I was tickled to death because I didn't know how I was going to get home. But when I got home, Phil was plowing the garden with his little old team. When my dad came to visit that summer, Phil said, well, she left me, you know. And my dad said, you didn't go after her, did you, Phil? And he said, oh, no. He said, she came home on her own. So that was a good thing. They didn't think that we should
do that. Well, did they ever get the tractor working?
I don't think we ever plowed with it. Now, Hub Matt might have.
But Phil just fine. They gave up and did his with the little, with the team and this little grasshopper. And of course, it was awful hard work, you know.
He had to walk behind it
and guide the horses and everything. But we finally got the crop in, and as I remember it, we had an awful good crop. We had good corn and good, and of course, by that time, we had some chickens and we'd gotten a cow and I churned butter. I never been on a farm at all, didn't know a thing about it, but it was really a great life. You know, it was really fun.
Out of your 80 acres, you know how many you got plowed with that?
I think we must have plowed it all.
All of it.
At least, I think 67 acres are irrigable on our place. Mm-hmm. I'm not just sure now. Later, Phil and Van bought another 80 and then added, you know, more farm to it. But that first one, I think we had about 67 acres of actual. And then that big ditch goes through our land, and that was taken off. And then the little ditch farms, you know, goes too. So, but I think we had actually about 67 acres. We had corn and alfalfa, and I don't think we raised beans those first few years, but in a few years later, why, the bean was a good crop there, too.
Did you just raise that feed corn or you have sweet corn?
Well, we had garden corn. And but mostly just feed corn, you know. But one time, Edgar DeBrot lived north of us, and he had horses, and of course, they'd been there a long time, too, and I looked out, and here my sweet corn was up about 3 or 4 inches, and here his horses were just going down the
nibbling.
Oh, I ran out and chased those things off. We had a terrible time.
That's horrible.
But let's see. We had about the fences. No, we didn't have fences at first. You see, they had to put up fences, and the ranchers, you know, a few of them that had ranches, didn't like us, you know, because we did fence the land. And there was one fellow there that did cut the fences. We never did catch him, but we knew who it was. Okay. He'd cut the fence and let his cattle in.
Well, how were there a lot of big ranches out there?
Quite a few, and south, and clear down to LaGrange, and way down that way, a lot of those cattle came clear up into our country until we got to all the land fenced. Now, we had a little trouble right at first with not having fences. But as soon as, one funny thing, there was a bachelor that lived north of us, and Paul Lindemann, and everybody fenced their land, and Paul's fence post stuck up so high, and he said to Phil one day, he said, "What, your fence post? Did you get shorter posts than I did?" He said, why is mine so high? He'd only buried his about this much. So what'd he do but go along and cut the top off? He didn't think about digging a deeper hole and setting it.
That'd be too hard.
Oh, that was too hard. We really laughed about that. But Bill Lammel was an awful good farmer. He had farmed a long time before. He was no bachelor. And he came, and I remember when he drove in, he had 2 or 3 teams of horses, and he had wagons, and he had household furniture, and he just had everything. We were always envious of anybody that could come and have that much to start with.
Now, did you do most of your shopping in Huntley, or did you come to
No, Huntley? We did most of our shopping the first few years in Henry, at the Anderson store. We'd go on the lumber wagon, and I'd take a lunch. And it would take us about all day to go down there, and we'd go down, and I guess we shopped there because Herc Anderson would charge it, you know, and carry us along.
Was that kind of a general store?
Yeah, it's still there.
I know they still advertise.
Anderson Target. It was a great store, and there was a Anderson Lumber Company, and Anderson Hardware, and the Anderson Grocery Store, and Dry Goods, and that's Herkmer. Phil went to the hardware store and got something, and then he went to the grocery store and the dry goods store and got something, and he said, "Now, what Anderson runs the lumber yard?" And they said, "Well, it was another Anderson." He thought that was a joke, you know, he was just asking about it, but it was really true. But they were great people. Now, I was going to tell you that when we first came up here, you see, about the
foreign people that we had. Mm-hmm. We didn't raise beets, so we didn't have the Spanish people. And then when we first raised beets, it was these German people. They called them Russians, you know, in those mm-hmm. days. And they weren't really Russians. They were Germans, but they went over to Russia with Catherine the Great. They kept their language and their religion. And but in this country, we called them Russians. And they were the beet tenders, and they are our finest citizens nowadays. They didn't do this work too long. They were so hardworking. They had large families, and they worked these beets, and all the strickers, you know, Ben and Charles and Fred, they all own big farms. They're all building big new houses over here in the new part now. They're just the greatest people, and they were just great neighbors and friends. We just worshiped them. But after the beets got, then we had more of the Mexican labor. I didn't know a thing about the Mexican people. One time Phil came in, and we had pickles. The Heinz Pickle Factory was down at Henry for a while. Uh-huh. They had big vats, and they salted their pickles there. So we raised some pickles for Mr. Heinz, and Phil came in one evening, and he said, Mr. Contreras, that was the man that was picking our pickles, wants to borrow your music rack. And he said, they're going to play a concert on Sunday. His family, we're all musicians, and they want, he said, now he's a fine gentleman, and he'll bring it back, and he'll take good care of it. So when he comes tomorrow, why you loan him your music rack? So he came, I said, now what's his name? He said, Mr. Contreras. So I thought, well, Mary, quite contrary. Mr. Contreras came up, and so I said, Mr. Contuffet, you know, I got it mixed up with little Miss Muffet, of course. Mm-hmm. Phil came in to lunch, and I said, well, Mr. Contuffet came and got the music bag, and he said, who? And I said, Mr. Contuffet, the Spanish man, the Mexican. He said, oh, you didn't call him that? And I said, well, sure, Mr. Contuffet. I was real polite, and oh, Phil was so mad at me, but I got my nursery rhymes and stuff.
No, that's okay.
And but anyway, the Spanish names, I got a little more used to them after that. We didn't have very good roads, but we got out petitions. They were going to make the highway from Torrington to Huntley. And we didn't exactly want the highway to go right in front of my house, but the place south of it was nothing but cattails. And we used to travel a mile north and then go by my house. So I got out a petition, and Doc Fuller wanted to go clear to his house and then that'd leave me a mile off. So we all got different petitions, and I ran all over the country, and we finally got the road just the way I wanted, just on the south of our house to go to Huntley, and it didn't bother.
That's on that big curve.
Yeah, on the big curve, yeah.
Right up over the hill into Huntley.
But oh, I tell you, we had great, great meetings and political things going. But we had great dances over there. We had great dances.
Big barn dances.
And oh, just wonderful dances. We had an orchestra. Louis Otis played the drums, and Eva Chasen was the doctor's wife, and oh, she could play piano like nobody's business. And I played the violin and different ones, and we called it the Homesteaders Orchestra. And we played all over the country, and that was one way we made part of our money.
Yeah.
And Phil didn't know how to play any instrument, and so I traded an electric fan. We didn't have electricity, and we had gone to a dinner club in Scotts Bluff a few years we lived down there. So I said, I'll trade an electric fan. Does anybody have anything to trade? And somebody had a banjo. So we traded, and so Phil took up the banjo, and I taught him to play. I didn't know how to play the banjo, but I could teach him because I could play the violin. So he was in the orchestra, too. So if we made $6 a piece at night, well, that would make us $12,
Why don't we stop that there?
We didn't have any crime or any violence out there. One time we heard that Bill Carlisle, the train robber,
mm-hmm.
It was down the valley, and that he was going to get to Fort Lamb. He had a lot of friends up there, and he was quite a great fellow. If you don't know by him, you'll read up on him. And I don't know how we heard that he was going through our country, but we never had locked our house. And Phil said,
Well, if Bill Carlisle's on his way through here to Fort Laramie, he'll probably come up our road because it went right in front of our house at that time. And he said, where's the key? Well, we couldn't find the key to our back door. We only had one door. And we couldn't find a key. And I think we just put a chair kind of under it, you know, like that. And he put the horses in the barn so that he couldn't steal a horse or anything. But I don't think Bill Carlisle ever did that anyway. He walked every place. But he really did go from Lyman to Torrington. So he probably went right by our place. But the only crime that we ever had out there were the bootleggers.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lawyer here in town named Joe Rauscher. And he was defending a bootlegger. And, he was quite dramatic. He was get all red in the face and talk loud. And so they were trying to convict this old guy. And he said, man said, well, they found liquor in old Fred's car out at the armory at the dance. He was selling it outside. And Joe Rauscher said, if they found liquor in Fred's car, some other bootlegger put it there. He was on another case out there just about that same time. And he said to the man, he said, were you there when that pot was shired? Yeah. He'd always get excited. Oh, he was the funniest man. He died kind of young. I guess he had his heart working too hard.
Uh-huh.
But the bootleggers were nice guys. They were real nice fellas. We had Ralph, the famous bootlegger from Lyman, lived over west of us, and he was one of the nicest gentlemen. He did a lot of road work and did all this, and he was just a great guy.
Did he have a homestead too?
Uh-huh. He bought a relinquishment and lived over there. He didn't homestead in the real early days, but he lived there while we were homesteading, and he was just a real nice man. And the bootleggers, they were just trying to make, like the rest of us, trying to get a little...
Did they sell mainly to individuals, or were there some nightclubs in Torrington?
Well, they had to wear tags to keep from selling it to each other, you know. There were so many, so many bootleggers that you could just get at any place, and everybody knew who they were, you know. They didn't have any trouble with that.
Did they have a lot of elaborate equipment to make?
Oh, I don't know. Some of it. There was a doctor. There was a doctor out there, Dr. Chasen. He was he had an office here in town, but he didn't sell it.
Mm-hmm.
He just made it for his own use. But he made really pretty good whiskey. It didn't blind anybody or poison anybody like some of it did. But he didn't ever sell it. He just made it for his own use. But he knew how to make it, and it was real good. It was his wife that played the piano in the orchestra for us, too. But
did you do any bootlegging yourself?
No. Oh, I was so mad at Phil one time. He went over to a neighbor's. Sally was just little. She was about six, and she came home and she said, "Mama, I'm so dizzy. I have to cross my legs to stand up." And I said, and she was white as a sheet, and she was sick, and I took her out, and she wanted to throw up, you know. And Phil looked so downhearted, and he said, "Oh, I'm so ashamed. They'd been drinking beer over there," and then the three little kids, there two kids and the eyed kids and Sally, and there would be yeast and stuff, and they drank what was in the bottom of those things, and she was actually pie-eyed.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was so mad at him for doing that to her.
Uh-huh.
But I guess she kind of still remembers that.
That's
it. No, we didn't ever make anything except we made a little beer for our own use, you know, during that was...
How did you go about making it?
Well, I don't know. You had to have water and sugar and hops, didn't you? I think you used hops. We had a great big 20-gallon thing, and we made it in a little thing. It was a granary.
Mm-hmm.
And one side was a wash house. The other side was granary. And it was warm out there, you know. And... one time it was during the winter time, and I gave music lessons to the Methodist preacher's daughter, and he came in. We had the thing behind the rain, the big
heater. And this, but this time we had a little kitchen on there, so we had two woods. And so when he came in, the preacher said, "Bacon bread." You know, he smelled like yeast. Oh, it's embarrassed. But anyway, I didn't say anything about the bread. And all time, I know he waited for his daughter to take the music class. And I know he thought I was going to slice the hot bread, but I didn't say anything about it. It was just the beer brewing in the car. Phil had a light, and he'd stick it down. We had a big blanket around the truck, so he couldn't tell what it was. But we didn't ever sell any beer. They just made a little beer for our own use. But sometimes it didn't turn out pretty good. It was kind of wild, you know. If you didn't let it get pretty tame for a while, it would start to blow up.
You could tell us a little bit about some of the songs that you played and some of the types of dances you did. I know you mentioned you played in the band.
They just did the two-step and that kind of dances.
Any square dancing?
We had some square dances, and I played mostly for the square dances, so I don't know really much how to square dance, but people enjoyed. You know, we didn't have money, but we had lots of fun.
Getting together.
And one time on a birthday party, one man ate 20 dishes of ice cream and a piece of cake with every dish of ice cream.
I'll bet he
was homemade ice cream. But it was kind of unusual to have all that. And I guess he was hungry. You know, these homesteaders,
they have big appetite.
Yeah, they have big appetite. And the bachelors. Oh, they just would love it, you know, when we had these covered dishes, because some of us were kind of good cooks, you know. We kept house real well. But mostly the dances were just, they didn't do this, the chicken and the, that kind of stuff. They actually put their armor on them, you know, and cheek to cheek sometimes.
Did you have any kind of box lunch? Picnics and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, we had a covered dish.
You know, you see the movies where they have all the gals at a picnic and they auction them off. Like that.
We did that a time or two, not too much out there. Mm-hmm. That was a little before our time. We used to put all the kids in one room, though, and put them to sleep when we had our parties, like the old Virginian, you know, in the old story. But our dances were just pretty elegant dances, and we served them over in the Huntley. We built a community hall. The farmers all got together, and we went around and solicited money. The merchants in Torrington and Henry and even on down the line, Father Scott's Bluff, and gave us money to build this. It first started out just a basement, and then they built it up. And I think that's what is the church now there, the Presbyterian Church. But we had awful nice dances, and we didn't have electricity. We had these Coleman ladders, and some of us would take our Coleman lantern, and we always broke the, what do you call that thing?
The mantle,
and it cost us money, but we'd hang them up and break it coming home again.
Oh, I know what you mean. The chimney.
Yeah.
The chimney.
Sure. The mantle, that little fuzzy thing.
Isn't it the... Oh, the little thing inside of your light? Inside. Yeah, that's the mantle.
Sure. Uh-huh, and it's so delicate. And after it's been lit, you know, you can't move it much because it's almost an ash. Mm-hmm. And but we'd carry our lanterns. The DeBrots always brought a lantern, and I brought a lantern, and two or three of them, we'd light the hall with that. And then, we had good food. We'd serve them. They'd pay for their food, you know. We had pie and coffee, and during intermission, why people would come up and
bet you had some good pies.
Oh, yeah, just had elegant
pies. I love pie.
We've had apple and pumpkin pie. One time, we had a club called the Auxiliary. We were going to be the auxiliary to the community club. They never did get the community club started, but the auxiliary got started, and there was six of us. And so it was election time, and we were going to serve the lunch and make some money and serve to the election board. So we went over in the lumber wagon. It was, of course, in November and kind of bad weather, but we had all kinds of meat and stew and vegetables and pie and stuff. And I went up to the place where they were having it was in a little place they called the schoolhouse there, and I said, we're going to serve lunch, and I think we're going to charge 20 or 30 cents, you know, for it. And one of the old men said, well, we've done it. So we went down in this store that the Greens had, and we made our husbands come in and buy all the food. We made $6, and that was our first $6 for our auxiliary. But that's really what got the community club started. The women got busy on that, and the men decided that they needed something. But they never did form a real, what they called a community club.
When did you have telephones? Or when you...
Not for a long, long time. We didn't have a phone, and it's an eight-party line, and it still is an eight-party line out there. Our ring was three shorts, and the Joneses had two shorts. And we could call each other, you know, on the line. Mm-hmm. I could ring two and Mary would answer, or she'd ring three and I'd answer. And it was many years later when we finally got, but the phones were, oh, that was a great help when we got the telephones out there, because Redfield was the superintendent. He's still here. Mm-hmm. And he was so great about if there was anything wrong with the line, he'd make his men stay. Now, we don't want you folks out there with children alone at night without a phone. And he'd have his men stay there till way late, fix the telephone line. He was so good about that.
Maybe you could tell us a little bit about some of your experiences or some of the things you did to make ends meet during the Depression years. I know you probably didn't have it as severe as many people back east, but perhaps you could relate some stories of some of the things you did during the Depression to make ends meet or something that occurred then.
Phil always kept his government insurance. He was a great insurance, and he kept his little $10,000, you know. It kept us poor in our young days trying to pay the premium. But one time, the mailman came, and Sally was just tiny, and left a dividend. It was $18. Left this dividend check, and Phil was plowing with his team way out there in the west, and I just couldn't believe we had $18. So I got the baby under one arm and had the check in the other and ran like mad out and waved, and Phil saw me coming, and he thought something had happened to Sally, so he tied his horses up, and he came running after me, and I said, look, and by that time I was crying, and he grabbed the check, and he looked at it, and he sat on the ground. He said, the Lord is looking after us. $18! And we were just so tickled to see it, because we didn't have the money. I had a neighbor that always would want me to shop for him, and I'd go down to Mitchell to give my music lessons. I charged $1.50 for 45 minutes, and I'd give lessons all day, so I'd make quite a little bit of money. And it didn't cost too much in those days to drive down. And I drove the old Model T Ford, and one time when I was coming home from there, I had a flat tire. And I sat on the edge of the running board and got out the little can and had a rough thing on the inside of it and took out the stuff, read the instructions, and took out the thing was about the size of a bicycle tube. Mm-hmm. And I put it over my knee, and I scarified it, scratched it all up and put the patch on it and rubbed it down, put it back in the tire, pumped it up, and got home all right. And we had this lady always wanted me to buy something. One time she asked me to buy some black baby ribbon for her. Mm-hmm. She had made her daughter a little dress. And so I bought it, and it was 79 cents or something like that. And so when I came through Henry, I used to stop and do some shopping, you know. And so I'd gotten quite a good many things. And then with the very end of the money, I bought her baby ribbon there at the Anderson Hardware Store. And then I remembered that I needed a loaf of bread, but I didn't have enough. Tried to buy a little bread, but that didn't worry me because I could always make biscuits, you know, we always had plenty of stuff at home to fix. Mm-hmm. So the next day then I took the baby ribbon over to her and I told her how much it was, and she said she didn't have the money, and so she never did pay me for that. So another time I was going down to, she gave me a sample of some taffeta that she wanted a yard and a half up to make a wash or something. So I said, well, now, you don't have to give me the money. And she said, well, I don't have the money.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't either. But I buy things with my music lesson money. One time I stopped at Henry and bought an ice cream freezer, you know,
Twister. Wow.
And all that was just great. Another time I bought a screen door for the back door. The cats had scratched in our feet. We need a new one. So whenever I'd get mad at Phil, I'd say, I'm going to take my ice cream freezer and my screen door and leave. Because that was really the things that I had paid for in the house.
Did they have speaking of ice cream, did they have an ice house here in Torrington?
No, we could get ice here in Torrington, and they delivered ice in Torrington in the old hearse.
Mm-hmm.
And when there wasn't a funeral, why, they used the old hearse for the ice wagon. But we could come up here, and where was that? It was out west there. It might have been about where that little, where we buy chickens down there, behind the big feed store there. Lynch's,
Lynch's,
down in there.
Yeah.
I think that's where we used to get our ice.
Did they cut ice off the river?
And yes, they did. And I don't think we ever used the ice for in ice things, you know. We had ice boxes.
Yeah, used it in your ice box.
We used it in the ice box to chill things. In the early days, we had a barrel down in the ground. Mm-hmm. And that kept things awful cool. It would keep our butter hard, and it would keep the milk sweet. We lined it with newspaper. She just sink a whole barrel, mm-hmm. and then have a cover over it and put a cloth over it. And that kept things real nice and cool. But we did have ice boxes, too, in later years. Mm-hmm. And we scrubbed on the washboard. I washed out north of the house. We'd get the water out of the ditch.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't too dirty, but it wasn't too awful clean.
No,
either.
You didn't drink that then.
Oh, no. That was for washing purposes. And one time I was washing, I had a tub for, you know, to rub with, and then I had a rinse tub. And Sally was just real little, and she sat down in a great big red anthill. She started screaming. She had a little straw hat on, and I ran over there and grabbed her, and she was just covered with red ants, and I put her in the rinse water, you know, the cold water, and the ants just floated out. They were just biting her all over. And when we first came, there were a few rattlesnakes out there, but after the irrigation started, why, they didn't, they left. They didn't stay around there, so we didn't ever have to worry. Mm-hmm. On the dry land, we were always careful never to, you know, to walk in weeds or without watching for rattlesnakes in the dry.
But you did some dry land farming then?
No, but that was I'd go after the cow or the horses or something. You know, we used our little few acres that we had for pasture for the cow and run them up there. Sometimes I'd go up there and run them down, and Sally would be with me, a little kid. But we'd always watch for rattlesnakes. The most fun we had was taking our bath in the ditch. We'd go up there, and there was a big waterfall there. And one day, I wanted a little deeper, so it was against the law to touch those head gates, you know. But I put some boards in. I didn't know any better. And I had a nice pool there, and Sally was in there, and I was in there with her. And we were just having, pretty soon here came two neighbors coming up to see what happened to their water and stopped running. We had dammed up the water, and their ditch was running dry.
The ditch wasn't very deep then.
Well, oh no, it wasn't deep at all. And it wasn't cement, you see, it was mud. Bottom, uh-huh. It's all cement now, but in those days it was just mud bottom. And we had a little boat, and Sally would, I'd stay in the boat, and she'd push up the hill, going about a half a mile west, you know, and then she'd get in, and we'd ride back. And then I'd sit in the boat, and she'd paddle along. She was pretty good size. Uh-huh. We taught lots of kids to swim. We wanted everybody to swim, you know, because lots of kids are when Sally was named the beauty queen over at the university, why, she called me up, and she said, oh, I've been elected beauty queen. And I said to her, oh, don't forget, you were just raised in an irrigation ditch over here. Don't let it go to your head.
Did many people give up their homesteads that you know, was there a large number that actually didn't make it? Or
at Huntley, it's surprising how many people actually stayed and proved up, and a lot of them still own. That's why this Huntley Homesteaders Club, this club that we have in June every year, is so great. There's so many of those same people out there. Now, I think Veteran was about the same way, the Cotters and the Courtneys and those old maids that were the, you know, Hattie Mae and those old nurses that were so great. They're all gone now, but this community really stuck together, and Huntley, oh my gracious, everybody just thought Huntley was just good. But they were high-class kids. They were all partner, all college people, and they were a great bunch of people, well-educated, and enjoyed the better things of life. And it was a struggle for them to come out and give up good jobs mostly.
During the Depression, were there a lot of kind of transient people coming through looking for jobs and looking for work?
Well,
or did you notice anything like that?
We'd have to go when we needed help. One time I went down to Lyman, and the Phil said to go down there, and so my aunt was visiting me, and I went down there, and there were a couple boys there. I said we needed help, and two brothers, and they came up. And they just lived right in our house. We had cots and stuff. And by that time, we had another little room built on or two. And, they were the greatest boys you ever saw, you know. The other time, I came to Torrington and went in the pool hall and got a young fella. And we have often wondered about him. But I still don't know. I think he was probably a fugitive because he had dyed his hair. We knew his hair wasn't the color of it. He had it red, and but just to hear him talking, he was well educated and just such a good worker, and he was such a nice fellow. We were always a little suspicious that he had changed his name and everything, because I'd ask him about his folks and he never would say anything about his mother. But the first day I got him, we were going to have one of these big picnics over at Huntley, and he was so impressed because we took all this good food and everything. It was real, real nice. But as far as tramps or anything like that, we didn't have anything like that. If we wanted somebody to work, why? Now, then after the WPA started, you know, lots of times we couldn't get work. They'd be stand down here without jobs in the pool hall, but they wouldn't come out to work. You know, they could get paid without working. So sometimes it got to be kind of hard. We had a lot of cherry trees, and sometimes we'd be helped to pick cherries, and it would be pretty hard to get somebody. They could get paid, you know, without working.
During the Depression, did the government have people in this area planting tree rows and windbreaks?
That's how we got our trees.
Yeah, that's what I
remember. On the, was it McNary? What act was that? But one time, they told us that we could get these trees from the state, and Gibson was our county agent here, and I was a 4-H club leader, and Gibson said, Helen, let's plant 50,000 trees in Huntley. So I said, I thought that would be great because we didn't have any trees out there. So we called for a big covered dish supper, you know, and got everybody coming in there, and everybody signed up for so many trees. And there was Pete Keenan and Lois Otis and Phil and there was a Jew boy down there, I can't think of his name, and Henry Colley, and quite Dan Jones, a bunch of us that signed up to get these trees. Mm-hmm. And so they were to send them out in the spring. Well, in the spring, people got busy and they didn't want to take them, but about six or eight of us did take our trees. We planted over 50,000 trees, and that's what the forest is out there now, is those little trees. They were just little bitties. They'll, another time we ordered some evergreens the same way, and we're supposed to get 500 of the little evergreens. And so Pop said, I'll take the pickup this morning and go and get it, you know, to get 500 little evergreen trees, be pretty good size. So Sally lived here then, and it was after
She's married to Van, and they lived in town here. He taught school in Huntley at first, and then moved to Tarkton. And so I was waiting for him over there, and Bill came in. He had a little corsage box about that size. And he said, well, here's your trees. And, evergreen was about 2 inches high, and the roots were about 6 or 8 inches long, but they were all twined around, and we really laughed about that. He didn't need his pickup for those trees. But the trees now are huge, you know, great.
They most of them are.
Oh, yeah, they were just so great. And a lot of people planted those trees, but some of them, when it came spring, they were too busy to bother with it and didn't get their 5,000 or whatever they signed up for. But we got ours, and then we bought a lot of extra trees down at Henry. Gage Holloway had a nursery down there still, this lovely place. And some of our trees we got down there, too. Mm-hmm. But some people just didn't care about planting.
Did the government have many work progress projects around here or anything like that?
Not till after the WPA started. That's the first that I remember about. They got an awful lot of good work out of them bridges. That one bridge, mm-hmm. I think, was built. And then
part of some of the schools.
Oh, there. Yes. And the Guernsey, that's when they developed
the dam.
And, well, not especially the dam, but the park. Uh-huh. They got a lot of work done. It's been improved on since.
Was there a lot more water coming down the flat in those early years, like 1915, 1920?
Well, I think it was the age is just like it is now.
Really?
We came after the irrigation, and mm-hmm. they took off. There's another, what is that name?
Well, I know they've got Pathfinder up there.
Yeah, that's where it
and
started.
And Glendo uh-huh. and all those. I didn't know when those were built.
Well, the Glendo Dam was built after that. Mm-hmm. I can remember when that was first gone.
Well, you know, a lot of the pioneers that came through in the 1800s mentioned that the Platte River was a mile wide.
Oh, yeah.
And it was quite an impressive river. Of course, now it's, what, maybe 150 yards wide.
In places it isn't really very wide.
No, not anymore. You can, just by driving down the valley, you know, say from here to Scotch Bluff, you can see places where you know that it must have been tremendously wide. Yeah. Just a magnificent river. And I just kind of wondered what it was like when you arrived, if you can remember.
I can't remember much. The bridge when we first came here was a mile west. And we used to have to come across here come across the prairie, you know, there wasn't any road really. And we'd go a mile west to get in Tarney, but they were building this bridge just right the next year or so after we got here. So, but that wasn't the WPA that built that, but it must have been the state or government, I don't know.
Well, that's interesting. I was just kind of curious.
By Cannon's Park there, you see it.
Well, let's see. I guess we've covered really pretty much everything. Can you think of anything else that
you might
find interesting to mention? We have
I just know that we really enjoyed our...
One other thing. I got one.
Okay.
Did you have a country doctor?
Oh, we had... there was old Dr. Platts was here in Torrington, and... then there was Dr. Barbie here when we first came here. They'd come to the country, you know.
They made house calls.
Oh, yeah, they made house calls. One time, Doc Platts was a real rough old guy, and he just swore and cussed and everything. And one time, he was hitching up his buggy to go out to deliver a baby, and somebody had come in and told his wife that... for him not to come, that the baby had been born and they had taken care of it. It was out the Hulk Springs. And so Mrs. Platts went to the front door and she called to him. And he said, oh, don't bother me. I'm busy. I've got to get ready. And so then she tried to tell him, you know, and she couldn't make him understand. So finally he hitched up and drove clear out. She was so mad at him. She just let him go anyway. He got out there and they said, well, we sent word for you not to come because the baby was already here. But the doctors were just great. They would come to the country. And I remember one time Sally got pneumonia and or something like that. She had a bad cold and fever. So we brought her in. There was a little old hospital where the pig show is there. Mm-hmm. We called it the hospital. And Dr. Barbie said, "Now, daughter," he always called everybody daughter. He said, "When a grown person's sick, why, I might fool around, but when it's a child," he said, "I get them well in a hurry." And she didn't, wasn't sick very long either. He was a wonderful doctor.
Well, that's very nice. Thank you very much for spending this time with me. I really appreciate it. I think it was a very interesting conversation.